Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show,
Monday through Friday,
on the Athletic Podcast Network. Welcome to Tampering.
For this beautiful game of basketball that we all love and talk about every single day.
With Sam Panic.
To be able to bring people together. Reportedly at the center of an NBA investigation
into tampering accusations.
And the message to executives in the league is
stop talking about players on other teams.
What did I do?
The charges filed.
Impermissible contact.
Right or wrong?
Tampering charges are really difficult to prove.
You know me, I talk.
Kind of awkward to even talk about. I can't even mention teams anymore.
That's what I like to play with Kevin Durant.
The trial you want with tampering.
They're always ahead of the rules.
It's not rocket science.
Everybody, we don't think I've tampered with the guys.
I didn't tamper. I'm just telling you what happened. I'm just telling you what happened.
Hello and welcome to the Tampering Podcast, part of the Athletic NBA Show Network. I'm Sam Amick, NBA writer at The Athletic, here as always, bringing on a debut guest to the show, a guy that I've slowly but surely gotten to know, unfortunately, just digitally, because with COVID, you can't actually go out and meet human beings just yet. We got Law Murray on the show today, Clippers beat writer, previously at ESPN, NFL Media, Fox Sports, a guy who is you know, in his first season on this beat, but is already doing really good work, getting embedded with that Clippers group. Even again, though it's remote, you can tell that he's making headway and just pumping out high quality stuff. Law, my friend, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me. Thank you, Anthony, for having me as well. It's great to be on this morning.
I had to make sure I gave you the entire stage right out the gate. But Anthony, of course, being Anthony Slater out west, our Warriors beat writer and regular tampering contributor. Slater, what's up, brother?
Nothing. Just another thrilling week in Warriors land. The rookies out for the season. So last week we were kind of joking about the cratering of the Warriors. It continues.
It does continue. And with that, and we're not, you know, doing a Warriors pod, but it's always going to have a Warriors element to the show. Here's what we got on tap today, guys. We're doing kind of an extension to me of last week. Last week we talked the lie detector test episode. Who do we trust? Who do we not? And the Clippers are in that conversation, but they're looking very trustworthy at the moment. So we're going to dive in with Law on all things Clippers, but within the context of the West and title contenders and status and believability and authenticity. But yes, for sure, Slater, on the back end, I want to talk Warriors. It's funny, as a side note, I had an interview the other day with Tyrese Halliburton, the Kings rookie that has kind of become one of their few bright spots of the season. And we were kind of unpacking his fall to number 12 in the draft. And he shared, and this might surprise some people, that on draft day, he did still think there was a possibility that he would wind up going as high as, you know, number two to the Warriors. And whether that's true or not, or whatever, like with Wiseman getting hurt, as you guys know, whenever a draft pick doesn't succeed immediately, then becomes the noise about who should they have taken, who would have worked better there, whether it's LaMelo, whether it's Tyrese, any of these other guys. So yeah, tough times in Warriors land, but let's start with the Clippers. Law, when you and I talked a couple months ago to kind of just get to know each other a little bit, it was like, you know, you're reaching out to the front office with Lawrence Frank and Michael Winger, trying to connect with them. You know, Ty Lue and you seem to have a good rapport even over Zoom, where, you know, he's had a little fun at different times, you know, kind of throwing jabs your way in a good way. And you're making your way. But this team, man, like, just, I guess, go big picture for me at this point. They, as we record the pod, they're 37-18. I think they've won 11 out of 13. We were just talking off air about how Kawhi Leonard should be in the thick of the MVP discussion. He's really not. So very quietly, they're going out and doing a bunch of good things. Obviously added Rajon Rondo recently and are finding their way there. But what's your view as we sit here in almost mid-April?
Well, the view right now is this is the arguably the most well-rested team in the league on one accord. But on the other, they've played the most games out of everybody. And so it's kind of strange when you think about a team that hasn't had to be on a plane. They play a road game Tuesday night in Indiana. It'll be their first one since literally the day of the trade deadline in San Antonio. And they've played incredibly well, considering guys being in and out of the lineup, considering all the pieces that they're trying to implement. And at the same time, you're just like, they're not playing enough close games, and people just get really upset about the fact that they keep blowing teams out, and that kind of throws things off with how they want to evaluate the Clippers going into the playoffs.
Right, right. Within all that, I wonder, you know, your predecessor, Jovan Buha, did a great job on the beat. And I would always kind of monitor his interactions with Clippers fans. Fascinate me because you never know how many of them there are. The interactions, they're just different. I don't even know what I mean by that, but I think you guys probably do know what I mean. Like the early impressions of Clipper Nation, because when you have these beat jobs, as Slater, you know, there is, like, especially with Twitter and social media, there's an intimate connection and relationship with this crowd that, like it or not, you wind up engaging with on a daily, hourly basis.
Yes, Jovan's a saint. That's my guy. I love Jovan, and I miss him. I haven't seen my guy in so long, man. It's been since 2019. We were at Clipper Blog at the same time, so we have an intimate relationship on another level with the fan base of this team, digitally and otherwise, right? And so it's not like he had to, like, prepare me for much or anything. I've definitely had Jovan's name in my mentions way more than I ever had. And I've known this dude for damn near 10 years. So every time someone brings up Jovan, whether it's a pod or whether it's a tweet that I send out, something innocuous, I'm just like, damn, bro, what did you do to these people? You know, Jovan's a pro. He's been a pro for forever. He's a precocious talent. So I know Jovan's not tripping about it, and I'm not either. You know, we're two different people. We both enjoy what we do and enjoy where we're doing it at. So, I mean, it's no big thing for me. Fans can say what they will, and as long as they respect where it's coming from, it's all gravy.
I've never seen a team shoot like this, the Clippers.
Yeah.
I'm looking right now down the list, like, you know, Paul George has taken 304 threes. He's 44%. And I'm just going down, you know, total threes. All these guys have taken at least, what, I'm looking, 160 threes. Marcus Morris, 47% from three. Kawhi Leonard, 39.5. And that's the worst on the top list. Batum's at 42.5. Reggie Jackson shooting 43% from three.
Slater, can I augment your point real quick and then throw the mic back to you? This is courtesy of StatMuse. And you guys, I'm sure, saw this tweet last night. The best three-point volume shooting team in NBA history, minimum 30 attempts per game, 42.1% your 2020-2021 Clippers. The Bucks are a couple of percentage points behind them this season as well. But, you know, high volume, high, incredibly high accuracy, it's potent stuff.
From everybody.
You've never, like, seen it.
I honestly, I haven't. Like, you know, and I think the story of the Jazz is, like, their high volume and high accuracy, and, like, that's... we've talked plenty about, like, that's Utah's formula to try to, you know, get through the West. I mean, the Clippers are shooting better. They don't take as many, but they're basically making the same amount per game because, I mean, 42-43% as a team is crazy. I mean, like, you know, most teams, what, want like 2-3 40% shooters on the roster?
Right.
Everybody on the Clippers is shooting 40%. And I would ask Law, like, what, like, especially I'm looking, like, Reggie Jackson's not a 43% three-point shooter. Like, how, like, why is this happening? Why is everybody on the team shooting so well from three?
It's basically three things. Number one, it's individual talent. These guys have a lot of these guys have a track record of being good in the first place. That certainly helps. Number two, I would say when you have both Kawhi Leonard and Paul George being so willing to share the ball, get into the paint, kick out, make those extra passes. I mean, the spacing is phenomenal. And that's with a guy in Serge Ibaka who they plan their whole season, you know, going into the season, having five guys out for the majority of their time on the floor. He hasn't been available in 4 weeks and he's not going to be available this week, you know. So they've had this just emphasis offensively of moving the ball, great spacing and everything. And it hasn't even been with the most ideal lineups to promote that. And then it's just the coaching, the development. A guy like Terrence Mann shooting 41%. If this dude was shooting 40 some percent or evaluators thought he would be that kind of shooter coming out of Florida State, I don't think he would have lasted to the dead end of the second round in the draft in 2019. Like, it's been like that, where young guys, veterans, they come to this team and they just shoot incredibly well. Like, the player development is phenomenal. So when you put those three things together, great track records of your best players, great emphasis as far as the coaching on a day game to game basis, just the habits, and then just guys working on their shot, and you see the results. It's been a great shooting season so far.
So to piggyback on that law, it's funny, one of the downsides of not being in the arena, I'm just going to own this. You talk about player development, and I'm sitting here in my head thinking, all right, so who are we going to give some love to on that front? But because we're not in the arena, and because I'm not staring at the Clippers coaching staff in person on a routine basis, I actually am drawing a blank on who all makes up that staff. Who's getting some of the love when it comes to player development with Ty Lue's staff?
Yeah, Ty Lue shouted out Sean Fine quite a bit, working with a host of players, especially when I bring up shooting. Like, he always shouts out Sean Fine. Kenny Atkinson, who was a Nets head coach. Kenny Atkinson gets a lot of credit for working with guys. I mean, you could have saw him yesterday, or not yesterday, but Sunday before the game, just working on all kinds of players, both young guys and vets. He's the de facto offensive coordinator. He just does a really good job working with these guys consistently all season. Chauncey Billups is on the staff. He has a lot of guys here. So, right. I mean, I can say a lot of guys on the staff, but those guys in particular have done a great job as far as what we're talking about, as far as the elite level shooting.
Yeah, and that's an elite coaching staff too. I mean, you're talking about Kenny being a former head coach, Chauncey being a guy who was in the discussions for, you know, leading a front office potentially, and with a connection to players, no doubt. The crazy thing that you mentioned, Slater, and that I think we have to reshape the way we think the West through the prism of this three-point attack is, like, you're right, Utah has been labeled as, you know, the team that was pushing the envelope from long range. But, and I just looked at the overall numbers, it's like the Clippers are taking 9 fewer a game than Utah, but coming in only, what is it, about 2.3 fewer when it comes to makes. And so come playoff time, you know, the Jazz better have everything squared away in terms of their attack beyond the three-point shot, because that's the kind of thing I think that's going to separate, or, you know, cut that gap between them and teams like the Clippers. I guess, you know, from there, like, overall, are we just sleeping on the squad because they had so much shade thrown at them with good reason coming out of the bubble, and watching that in person, Law, it's on my top 20 of, like, pretty wild things to see in person. Paul George hitting the three-pointer off the side of the backboard, the general demeanor of the group when everything was falling apart, and that kind of that mystery that hung over them of what in the hell happened internally, like, why, whether it was the chemistry stuff that we wrote so much about, but it was such a bad look that the stink is still on them, at least nationally, where they still get overlooked because people, it's a little bit like the Bucks, where, all right, good for you, you're having another good regular season, we don't believe you, you know what I mean? But nonetheless, they look really good right now, and obviously the roster is a lot different. They got a whole different approach and personnel here.
Yeah, the roster changing is the thing that I feel like is important to focus on. When Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, when they got to the Clippers, it's not like LeBron James, when he got to the Lakers, it's not like they had to rebuild something. That Clippers team had succeeded without those dudes. They had developed an ethos, a certain way of going about things, that really, it was going to be difficult to integrate those guys, especially considering Kawhi's insistence on not playing or practicing every day, especially considering Paul George coming to LA after the major shoulder surgery. So he wasn't able to kind of develop that bond. This team was really good last year. They were really talented last year. And maybe things would have been different if coronavirus, the pandemic, didn't suspend the season for months. And the Clippers were arguably, I mean, if you want to talk, 22 teams went in the bubble. They're probably one of the bottom three teams as far as, like, handling those circumstances. That's what's going to be different this year.
Right.
Yeah. Bottom one, maybe. You mentioned Serge Ibaka earlier, in his absence, and they're obviously playing very well without him right now. But I do think he remains vital. You know, as a playoff player, playoff tested, switchable, big, can shoot it. What's the update on him? You know, where's he at? Because back injuries are not simple to get over.
Yeah, they're definitely not. And Ty doesn't want to talk about it. We haven't gotten a chance to really get more information out of the team than the fact that they're really taking the slow approach to it. Because back injuries are tricky, I mean, that's one reason he's not traveling. And the hope is that he can come back before the end of the regular season. It's great that Aviz Zubaz has played well. The fact that DeMarcus Cousins is on a 10-day contract right now kind of speaks to the fact that they feel like they just need a little bit of roster insurance. But it would be great for Serge to get back in enough time to be ready for the playoffs. And I don't get the feeling that they're overly concerned, but 4 weeks is a long time to not play. A month is a long time to not play. So we'll just have to see what happens when the team returns from the road trip this week.
We don't need to go too far down this road, but a bit of Clippers housekeeping that I'm curious about in terms of the roster. I'm looking at it here. You know, when Cousins signs that 10-day, we're guilty in the media, and I get it because like certain guys like DeMarcus have a name. You know what I mean? And so it's big headlines. It makes the rounds, and it's a big story. And then I feel like, especially with some of the buyout guys, 10-day guys, we kind of got to recalibrate. Like, all right, how much is he going to actually play, and what's going to happen here? Do you have any sense right now of where that situation's going? He's only played in 2 games since getting there, a combined 14 minutes, and obviously the clock is ticking.
Yeah, I feel like the team wants him around, and it goes back to the vibes, if you will, for lack of a better term, of what the team is trying to build as far as culture, as far as togetherness. You know, DeMarcus is there partly because he's a body, literally a big body, right? Has some NBA branded skills, but he's also there because he's cool with a bunch of dudes on the team. Like Rondo right. loves him. Patrick Patterson loves him. Patrick being a guy who is somehow playing a little bit more since DeMarcus got there. Paul George is cool with him. Kawhi, it respects him. And for someone like Kawhi, that means quite a bit. You know, I think they want him to stick around, if nothing else, because it's same reason they have Serge Ibaka. Like having guys who want to lighten the mood, who want to be around each other, I think that matters. So he's not going to play much. There's only a few lineups in the entire league that he's safe to play against for a few minutes at a time right now. And that's cool. You know, they want a good locker room. They want a good culture. And I think that's something that people need to understand when it comes to someone like DeMarcus Cousins right now.
Let's dive into some of the playoff possibilities. We're getting to that time of year. We still got 4 or 5 weeks left, but here's what's funny, guys. And I'm just, again, I'm going to own this too. I'm owning things all over the place today. I made a counterintuitive choice in late May, early June, to sneak away for a few days, basically not to get into my personal life too much, but the family's got a little time. We all need a breather. And I'm thinking, you know what? I can miss a few days during the first round of the playoffs because it's going to be a long haul after that. And then I might end up doing the Olympics, you know, after the playoffs. So that was the strategy, right? But if you would have told me that Clippers Lakers might be in the first round, I probably would have moved that thing off the calendar. And now you're looking at the Clippers and you're wondering, you know, it's one thing to fix some of the things that you think were broken from last season and improve, but it is going to be an absolute gauntlet trying to get through the West. And the idea that they could see a team like, the, you know, the Lakers, they still got to drop 2 more games, you know, to where you would have like a 3-6 matchup. That probably won't happen. You know, LeBron and AD should be back on the later end of the season, but Lakers, Nuggets, Jazz, and your guys' opinions of those three teams, and if you got to pick one that's going to trip these Clippers up from a matchup standpoint, who would that be?
I don't think the Clippers want to see the Nuggets, and that's not recency bias. I mean, they only lost 2 games out of this 9-game homestand. The Nuggets game is the one everyone saw because it was national TV. It was a big deal. People were like, why can't you take the Nuggets seriously, as if Christmas didn't happen? But that's another story. I just feel like the Nuggets are stressful offensively. You know, you see what the Nuggets have been able to do outside of the Celtics game. That was bizarre. But the Nuggets are the kind of team that they take away so many of your resources. They take some energy. They completely disqualify certain lineups. I think Ty Lue is going to handle it better than Doc did last year. But at the same time, that Nuggets team upgraded. They're really good. They're versatile as far as how they can defend the guys that they would need to defend on this Clippers team. That would probably be the most stressful first round series for the Clippers. And I'm not going to sit here and say that I would expect the Clippers to win that series if it were to happen.
Could you argue they should want the Lakers early? You know, I think we'll be better informed when we see what LeBron and AD look like right when they return. But it's not going to be a simple ramp up process for AD for sure. LeBron, I would assume, will probably hit the ground running a little bit. But, you know, that Lakers team seems like they're probably going to try to build towards, you know, the end of the season. If you get them early, you might be able to knock them off early. You know, there may not be a better time to go up against the Lakers than round one, because an extra month of rhythm from LeBron might be a completely different LeBron. I don't know that I want to make that argument. Again, I want to see what these two look like. But, I mean, if you started the playoffs 2 weeks from now, or you know, just right now, the hottest teams in basketball, what, Nuggets, Clippers, Jazz aren't as necessarily
Phoenix
hot.
Phoenix Suns, for sure.
Yeah, Phoenix Suns. They're a team we didn't... That's probably who most of these teams want in the first round, right?
The disrespect, man.
I know, man.
Hey, Sam was doing it earlier, so...
He was.
What? Am I crazy to even suggest that the Lakers could be... You don't want to come out and say it publicly if you're the Clippers, but if you, that's your chance to maybe knock them off.
Well, since y'all teased it, I got to at least, you know, not leave the listeners hanging. Yes, I had a chat with Chris Paul, and I had to admit to him that I didn't have him on my short list of MVP candidates. So the disrespect was real. That was journalistically, guys, you know, you got to just own it. You can't sit here and be fake with guys you cover. So that was fun. Like, hey, Chris, sorry about that. He's in the conversation now. The Suns look really good. The disrespect is Miles Bridges. Like, my God, he's out here just... you know, catching bodies in the lane. I don't know if you guys saw that yesterday.
I saw it way too many times.
Oh my God.
I'm up here trying to get my midday meal in, and this dunk keeps coming up on the TL. That was a major distraction. I don't appreciate that, man.
We got a running segment in my house. Law, I got two sons, 14 and 11, and I'm clearly a terrible father because I have not been able to successfully turn them on to hoops. They're just not fans. They like it a little bit, but the running segment is like, can I get them to be impressed by a dunk? Because they're very tough to impress. I haven't run the Bridges one by them yet, but I'm probably batting about 300 this season with some of the different highlights that we go crazy over. But that one, if you're not impressed by that one, I mean, that thing was unbelievable. But the Suns in general are looking good. I mean, but Slater, to your question about the Clippers and who they're going to want, I mean, Memphis right now, the way the standings are, Memphis is for the Clippers the only quote-unquote gimme. Because beyond that, Dallas can get hot. Portland, you know, you don't want to see Dame in the playoffs. And who knows how the play-in tournament comes together. So I think I'm with you on the idea that checking that Lakers box right out the gate, you talk about momentum. I mean, if you get them out of the party soon and then go into the second round knowing that, you know, you took out the reigning champs, that's got to make you feel good.
And I will change my opinion if LeBron comes back looking awesome, by the way, and
right.
Davis.
Right.
But I just mean right now, like, there's unknown about that team. Like, there really is. And honestly, and we should say they're playing pretty well without those two, but we know they need those two going pretty full throttle to be the threat we think they're going to be.
I think I'll probably pick Utah in this group of Utah, you know, and Denver and who the hell else did we say? I don't know why I'm drawing a blank.
Denver, Utah, Lakers.
Yeah, sorry. Because with the Jazz, small sample size, but 6 degrees of the Suns component here, like, I thought it was fascinating that Phoenix survives in overtime against Utah in one of those games. It's like a midseason test, you know what I mean? And then the Clippers turn around and take care of business against Phoenix. And I watched both games really closely, and Law, we jumped on the same Zoom post game after the Suns game, and I was trying to ask Paul George essentially about the idea that, like, this Suns team is on the come up, and did you feel like you kind of want to stomp on them and not let them have any confidence? Paul was not feeling it, was he?
No, because first of all, the Suns employ Chris Paul, who Chris Paul does two things. He's going to make sure that his team is ready to win every single game, no matter what costs. And he's going to talk.
Right.
He's going to have his team talking. And right. they keep trying to test PG. It's the second time this year that they try to get on under PG's skin. And I think a lot of people would have been very, very satisfied if Paul George would have crumbled. Instead, Paul George had his best performances this season against the Suns this year.
Right.
So, yeah, it's like he's taking a lot of crap from that team, from those stars, and he's giving it back to him in a big way. He's hung two losses on them. The only other team that hung two losses on the Suns so far has been the Nuggets.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You know, the NBA is fantastic at entertainment and content. I will say, man, they continue to miss the boat when it comes to, you know, give me the R-rated on-court programming with some of the talk that we never get to hear, and your ratings are going to be through the roof, or your subscriptions, whatever the hell model you want to go with. Like, that's the stuff. Because Paul's reaction post-game, we got the tip of the iceberg, right? In terms of why he was in the state of mind that he was in. We'll never know all the specifics, everything that was said, but he went out of his way to talk about how, you know, I don't know what all the chirping was about, and that he's going to let them chirp. And he obviously, like you said, Law, went out and had his best game. You know, that stuff from a programming standpoint would be gold, but you know, we don't get it. Let's keep it moving and try to get into some of these squads that they're going to pose the Clippers some problems. And I guess on the back end, guys, you know, how much are they going to be tested? Who else is jumping out at you from the Portlands and the Dallases? And even, I guess, we got to give a little love to the play-in possibilities of the Spurs and the Warriors, if only to bring Slater in and get your hot takes on your crumbling team.
You don't. you don't need to put them in the threatening basket. Dallas is been really good lately. I mean, and Law knows this, like they gave the Clippers a run in that first round. And I mean, I know Porzingis looked really good early in that series, then he went out, and it's not like he's over all of his injury issues, but I would say you probably don't want to see Dallas if you're the Clippers right now, the way they're playing, at least. And I think in our little, you know, show preview, we paired Dallas with Portland, and I know Portland's a similar story, right? You don't want to see Lillard in the first round. I think Portland's playable in the playoffs. You know, just think about what the Lakers did to them in the first round. Everyone was hyping Lillard and hyping that like it was going to be a, you know, really kind of a challenge for the Lakers, and they trapped and blitzed Lillard and took the ball out of his hands. And I feel like that happens every playoffs when the Portland plays a good switchable defensive team.
Here it comes, Lossie. You got to read between the lines here. This is Slater coming from Warriors camp, and I have personal experience with this, and I'm kind of kidding, but it's true. Like, as you know, Slater, am I right? The Warriors respect the hell out of Damian Lillard. They also are kind of behind the scenes constantly talking about how if he would only get a little more of that off the ball action that Steph Curry has mastered all these years, that he would avoid some of these playoff traps that do give him problems every so often.
Yeah. Well, also, and you know this very well, Sam, if we talk about this kind of like Warriors-Portland relationship, they also believe the surrounding offensive talent with Portland can't necessarily exploit them on a 4-on-3 situation, and it's why Portland, the Damian Lillard side, has always been in love with the idea of Draymond Green being on Portland, because of the way when Steph Curry does get trapped, he flops it over to Draymond in the 4-on-3 situation. He's making plays and he's killing defenses for it. Portland's you know, Nurkic. I don't know how many times I've seen Nurkic catch that in the 4-on-3 and then just barrel into somebody, and it's a charge situation like that. And I don't want to be a Portland hater here, but I'm just saying, if I was picking those two situations and the way their seasons are trending, and if we look at net rating, like Lillard's unbelievable in the clutch time. Maybe that's the argument. You don't want to be in a playoff series with him, because if you're in a 2-point game with 2 minutes left, you're very scared of him. But I just think Denver's much more on the rise and a thornier matchup for, you know, we're talking Clippers, but a thornier matchup for anybody in the playoffs than Portland. That's just my opinion.
Well, the Denver thing that I've loved, and I wrote about this and we've talked about this, is like, you know, that Aaron Gordon pickup, the thing most people miss was that it was all about getting somebody to guard the Kawhis and to guard the Lucas and the LeBrons. And because nobody, you know, among the casuals, if you might say, really knows Aaron Gordon beyond a dunk contest, you know, they don't see it from that standpoint. But the Nuggets absolutely targeted him as a guy to fill that Jeremy Grant role to help them on the wing defensively. And so they'd certainly be counting on him to try to slow down both Kawhi and PG.
Yeah, here's the thing with Portland. Defensively, they've put themselves in a predicament where they're always going to be either too small or too unskilled. And this Clippers team would not mind seeing Damian Lillard. Like, the two times that they've seen Dame so far this season, they've shut him down. I'm not ready to say they've put him into Dame's worst two games of the season, but Dame's had some forgettable performances simply for the fact that the Clippers have a bunch of guys who can guard him. They can trap him aggressively. They're not fearful of the other options, and that's where Portland beats you. Portland beats you because they will take care of the ball and outscore you. Well, that doesn't really work against a Clippers team that you can't stop on one end and can stop your best player on the other end.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. So it'll be fun, guys. It's a ways out. Let's shift gears here, because Law, one of my favorite parts of this pod and the ability to freelance and kind of bring guys like yourself on and the women on our staff too, is like, we got an amazing staff at The Athletic. And even though you're not new in the game, this is your first year on the beat. Can you break down a little bit how you first got into this and just your own personal story and getting to this point and just achieving things like you have?
Yeah, I mean, it's a crazy story. I mean, I've always been involved in just trying to be creative, whether it's sports, whether it's hip hop, you know, like sketch comedy. Like, I've always felt like that was going to be what I wanted to do when I graduated high school in the Philadelphia area. I'm from actual Philadelphia, but Friends Central School, where I went to high school, you got to cross the street. You're in a different city. That's how that works. So, you know, when I got through college, I didn't think journalism was going to be my thing. I served.
Where'd you go to college? City.
I went to college at California University of Pennsylvania. It's an hour south of Pittsburgh.
Okay.
So that confuses people, because I don't know why they named a town in Western Pennsylvania, California.
Let me ask you this. Did you go there on purpose? And I'll explain why I asked that in a minute. Did the California, you didn't think it was in California, I hope, you know.
I did not think it was in the state of California. First time I actually saw it was when the women's basketball team won a national championship. I was like, wait, what?
That's funny. Do you ever hear the story about, this is right up your alley.
Old candy.
Clippers.
Michael Olowokandi.
Michael Olowokandi.
Yeah, there you go.
Went to
Pacific
University of Pacific, which is like 30 minutes away from me, south, in Stockton, California. No offense to the Stockton folks, but not, you know, the on the short list of places to buy real estate in this fine country of ours. It's a rough place. Olowokandi saw Pacific and legitimately thought it was by the Pacific Ocean, and was a little disappointed when he finally got there.
He thought he was going to the Pepperdine campus.
Right.
Basically.
Yeah. Story idea for a slow day there, La.
Yes. Thank you. the Candyman is very intriguing to me. 98 draft. By the way, I got to watch that 96 draft.
I know, no doubt.
Anyway, but I wanted to get involved in sports media. I just wasn't sure how, because journalism, I didn't think was my thing coming out of school. I wound up working with youth in a program called City Year in my hometown of Philadelphia. And then that's how I got to LA, because I did another year and got to lead a team in Los Angeles. I took a year off because I didn't want to leave. I didn't want to move back to back cross country in consecutive summers. Eventually got into USC's grad school, and that opened up a lot of opportunities for me. I got to cover the Olympics in Sochi, Russia in 2014.
Oh, wow.
I was there the whole 3 weeks. That was really before I was ever credentialed to cover an NBA game. I was covering the Olympics. We had some international relations
happening at that time. I mean, that was a tense time, Olympics to cover, right?
Yeah, that was a bubble before we knew what a bubble really was going to be in 2021, right? It was very strange to be there. It was basically a created atmosphere. It wasn't even that cold for the Winter Olympics, which I appreciate. I don't like being cold,
sure.
But it was stressful. I mean, you're in Russia and everything's going on internationally and whatnot, and here you are trying to just make it through the Olympic experience. When I got back, that's when I joined Clipper Blog. That's when I got in touch with Andrew Hahn and Kevin Arnovitz and all the people who were doing great work there. Seth Partnow was there at the time. Fred Katz was there. That's how I got my new basketball like community in a way, because eventually that led to me getting to ESPN. But in between me being an editor at ESPN and when I first started with Clipper Blog, that's when I got everything else. That's when I started covering the Drew League. That's when I started at Fox and Marketplace and kind of freelance. And I was at the NFL Network, and everyone at the NFL Media, everyone who knew me and knew my research capabilities when I was there, they knew that I was really fascinated by the game of basketball and applying what I knew about football to what I knew about basketball and vice versa. Right. So I'm really just blessed about how it all came together, like covering the Clippers from an earlier time period in the era that they're in, and then coming back to cover the team every day without having to, you know, figure out what's we're going to do in the rundown for NFL Total Access. Like, it's a big difference between now and 5 years ago. So I'm just really incredibly blessed.
So with all those experiences, I'm wondering just where did the last 6 months fit when you talk about not only just jumping on the Clippers beat and the kind of full-time capacity you are, but the unprecedented nature of it, right? Like this type of conversation every single day with players and coaches, Zoom only, you know, hopefully in the next couple weeks, couple months, you know, we can not only, I mean, you can go to the gym now, but you can't talk to anybody and everything is still remote. How have you navigated those waters?
I think that last year's experience, I mean, I was an editor at ESPN for parts of five seasons. This time last year, we were getting ready to cover the last dance. Like it was,
right,
you know, our playoffs, basically. That was like we transitioned to major events.
For me, saved us all, man.
Yeah, like the interest in the game, you know, the history and nostalgia of the game, it really carried us through the early stages of the pandemic. And then when we knew that there was going to be a bubble, when we knew that all of the writers and reporters were going to have to adjust how they were going to be able to do their jobs, you know, whether they were going to Florida or not, it also put it on me to be like, okay, what in my position can I do to best support all of the writers that we have, all the reporters that we have, and to not just think about the content and breaking the game down, but you're talking about stories, you're talking about relationships. So I really embraced the Zoom era. You know, I got on a bunch of those Zooms. I wasn't raising my hand or asking questions, but I had a great feel for what was going on and the adjustments that everyone had to make. I got in touch with every team and was like, hey, I'm Law. I want to just let you know that I'm a resource to y'all because we're trying to cover stories that they might not have. And, you know, there's some teams that don't want to hear that. You know, team that I cover might be one of them. But there are some teams that embrace that. It's like, oh, cool. Someone wants to know that we exist, you know. Right, so right. I'm big on relationships. I'm big on like not just the relationships of the people covering the game, but the people who are kind of in between the liaisons and whatnot. I feel like it's really important to uphold that and be consistent with it. And so I didn't think that I'd have this opportunity to cover a team in this era. Like, sports media industry is very challenging in normal times. I mean, you saw how the pandemic affected things a year ago. So like we haven't been in locker rooms. It's been a bunch of Zoom. It's a bunch of remote coverage, but I felt like I was kind of built for that. Like, I'm so excited to get in a position to see people and to, you know, look them in the eye, asking questions and to kind of just get that nonverbal communication that you can get when you're just not on camera all the time. Because in a way, like, I've been prepared to do that part of it for a while. So it's nice to have this little interim period where really it's a very controlled atmosphere.
Slater, you know this. One of the silver linings, and hopefully this remains a little bit going forward, is, you know, I never thought I would say that players, and more so than even coaches, they do a lot of media, but first of all, they're older. And so I think they just have a different attitude about doing media. But you have seen some players, I think, admit that because we have been disconnected for so long, that guys even joke about missing the media. And that's just the kind of thing you never saw before. Slater, your guy, you're one of one, China Clay, the dude who, you know, because he's been hurt, doesn't talk much. His press conference he gave, you know, 3 weeks ago or so was pretty epic, where he's sitting there, just the love for him towards reporters that he normally couldn't stand having to deal with every day was pretty palpable, as Slater shakes his head.
He was talking about going and swimming in the Bay Ocean with Janie McCauley, and he was...
Well, and Janie, I hopefully I'm okay sharing this. I forget if she said it on Twitter. So Janie McCauley from Associated Press gets a shout out from Clay, and like you say, Slater, he was talking about how, Janie, you know, I went swimming in the bay the other day and I thought about you because she's a big swimmer and it's great to see you and everything. And she had told me kind of offline, like, I think that's the first time he's called me by name the whole time I've covered him. Like, it's a new thing. And, you know, and maybe there's a little value in that that we can pull out.
I also think beyond that, that's not just like the pandemic and the Zoom world. That's Klay Thompson just like missing his past basketball life. You know, sure. I mean, he hasn't played basketball since 2019, but you're generally right. Although I know for a fact the first time there's a stressful game right. In the future and we're in the locker room poking around, you know, we're in Draymond Green right now. Like, he's probably hasn't talked after like four of the past five losses. And it's like we're not in a previous world. We can get in the locker room, try to get him before he, you right. know, walks out in the tunnel. Now it's like I'm sitting literally on this chair that I'm sitting in now post game, and I'm like waiting, like, hopefully he comes on this Zoom and like, what can I do?
So that's obviously not good, and technically speaking against the rules, but I do, you know,
did I just get him fined?
I know. Listen, Ray Ritter does a fantastic job. I'm on the PBWA board. I had to say something. I've talked to some PR guys and women who have actually talked about how, for one, I wonder if the Zoom element will still live in some capacity, even when we're back to quote unquote normal times, whether it's like, you know, reporters having the ability to jump on a road Zoom if they didn't travel with the team, who knows? But the other fascinating thing that we've seen is that some players, from a personality standpoint, are more comfortable talking over Zoom, and some PR folks have said, I think you're getting better stuff out of them in that forum than you probably would if they're sitting there, haven't showered yet, all sweaty, wanting their personal space. You're standing at their locker. It's a different vibe than sitting in a chair. Like, Jordan Clarkson comes to mind. He was one of the guys I had talked about, where he's been pretty insightful and open on Zoom in the kind of way that wasn't necessarily the case, you know, in the locker room days.
Yeah, the thing that I'm looking forward to as far as the end of the Zoom, and this is my experience with the Clippers beat, is that sometimes you just don't get enough time, you know. Yeah. Guys, they'll, and Sam, actually, you got a good Paul George night. Paul will always speak. It's not about Paul. Sometimes it's just about the team just trying to move things along. You know, like, Kawhi will sit down, he'll take a few questions, and it's like, oh, someone else is available, and then they dismiss Kawhi. Like, that's where it gets difficult, and that's a team by team thing. But
after waiting, by the way, for like an hour, that's the tough part. I mean, the waiting game, you know, and at least you're waiting on your couch. I guess it's a little more comfortable than being, well, you're not, you're at the arena.
Sometimes you're on your couch, sometimes you're in the arena, and the arena, it gets cold, you haven't eaten, you can't really drink anything unless you go outside. I mean,
man, outed myself, man. I haven't been to a game since the bubble, and so I'll go on these Zooms, excuse me, I'll go on these Zooms, and I'll pull up the gallery, and the guilt will wash over me, because I'm in my office, where I might have a glass of wine next to me, like, I'm chilling, and I look at the Zooms, and I got like 15 of my colleagues with their mask on, sitting in the arena, like you said, waiting to get home, but they can't leave until they get these Zooms done.
Yeah, it's tough. I waited to go back to the arena, Sam and Anthony. I waited because I hadn't been around people in almost a year to that point. You know, when I went back to Staples Center last month, the first game after the All-Star break, it was actually the Warriors game, Anthony. I was hyped, but at the same time, I was like, my goodness, the last time I was in the ESPN office was more than a year to that date. And that was a huge moment for me. And it was really an anticipation of the progress that we were making in terms of flattening the curve and getting this country back up and running and everything. But at the same time, it's like, that's such a major adjustment to go from the, you know, adjusting to things at home, working from wherever you're working from, to being back in that space, even though that space feels absolutely foreign because there's no people, because there's so many different things, the weird crowd noise and everything that is just a speaker, basically. It's been fascinating.
Yeah, it's weird. I've probably been, I don't know, 10, 12 games. I went to this previous, Warriors played the Rockets Saturday night. I went and selfishly, like, I'm very glad fans are coming back because it's just a sign of the world coming back. But I've been, you know, the Warriors have this like section where family can sit, and there's a section for photographers. And there's not many. I mean, it's one person every like 25 seats, basically. But I'll go sit over there. Like, I don't have to necessarily sit in the media section. I'm just walking around this empty arena that, you know, there's 25 bathrooms on the, as you walk around, that are completely, you know, these monstrous bathrooms or nobody's in there. You can go anytime you want. And then I actually went and sat in, you know, maybe 10 rows up from the court the other day. And it's just like, and I was sitting there in the seat and knowing that fans are coming back. This is the last home game to tonight. The Warriors are playing without fans. And this seat's going to be like $800 again, ooh, you know, to somebody.
Yeah.
You know, it's a 10th row Warriors Chase Center ticket. I mean, I don't even know what, like,
do you guys know, by the way, and not, sorry to interrupt, but like, I've been wondering about the seat pricing. Like, did they keep, for the most part, seats around the same neighborhood? Or if you were, you know, part of the small group getting in, were folks having to pay a premium?
I think you have to pay a premium.
Okay.
I was actually looking on SeatGeek at some baseball tickets. Like, I was in San Francisco because, you know, I went to the Warriors game and I was like, oh, the Giants are playing and they're doing 20% capacity. I was like, I didn't think I was going to go to the game, but I just went and looked and it was very limited tickets available. They were doing like 20% of the stadium. It was like $240 to, you know, sit right here. I was like, man, I think the exclusivity of getting in jacks the prices.
It's funny you mentioned the Giants. I actually had the thought of like, would it be worth, you know, taking my sons down there just for the unique experience? It's, you know, to be in a joint that didn't have that many people. But I'm with you too, Law. The anxiety, the PTSD, whatever you want to call it, everybody's getting used to coming out of our holes a little bit again. A couple of days ago, I had a couple family friends come over to our house. These are lifelong family friends, known me since I was 2 years old. They'd both been vaccinated, and I've had the first of my two shots. So that puts me at about 80% protection. So not a ton of reason for, you know, concern, but we mostly stayed outside. They came in the house for about 10 minutes. And as when they left, it was weird because I'm kind of sitting there going, man, good to see them. But my mind is still wrapping, you know, around the idea of interaction.
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to seeing how Sunday goes. It's going to be another milestone to cross, just like entering the playoffs is a milestone and what that's going to look like. I mean, and we got to understand, more than half of the league has had fans back in the building at this point. So a lot of people across the nation have kind of crossed that bridge. But we're talking about the three of us. We're all in California. Things have been different out here. Socially, we understand what we're dealing with, but at the same time, like, we've been hit and affected by it in a different way. And so it'll be very interesting just to see, you know, how everybody gets along and is able to do their jobs once Sunday, and for the Clippers anyway, Sunday rolls around.
Who they got Sunday, Law?
They have the Minnesota Timberwolves.
That Timberwolves.
Oh, a thriller.
Alex Rodriguez's Timberwolves.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's interesting.
Shout out John Krasinski. Killed it on that story. Getting the scoop ahead of everybody else. And that'll be
I hope they keep the team in Minnesota like John reported that they intend to do. I'm just going to say that.
It'll be interesting. I mean, they got, I think, a 2.5 year window, they said, where Glenn Taylor, current owner, you know, is going to usher in this new group and show them the ropes, you know. But shoot, you might have just set the stage for our next pod, Law. Maybe we'll have John on next week to talk about the T-Wolves. Hey, Law, thank you for coming on, man. It was fun to get to know you a little more, to break down all things Clippers. Make sure for the listeners that you read Law's latest. I'm looking here on our website. The Clippers now have the best offense in the NBA. Here's how a 9-game homestand helped build it. Have enjoyed your coverage this year, and thank you, man. We'll do this again. Appreciate you coming on.
Hey, thank you so much, Sam and Anthony. It was great to be on.
Appreciate it. Be good, guys.